understand it. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast. I'm Devin Davidson, your host. With me, as always, my co-hosts, Bruce Gunther and John Enns. Boys, what's going on?
Oh, we're figuring out defensemen tonight, so...
Yes.
Figure out who I want to draft.
Okay, so yeah, this week we're continuing with our How to Win Your Fantasy Hockey League series. This week we're talking about defensemen, as Bruce just mentioned. We'll rip through some hockey news here quick, and then we'll jump into it. Next week, just so everybody's aware, we're going to finish off the series here with goalies. And I guess, Bruce, I might as well just mention right now, we booked our first guest. So Apples and Genos, his name's Nate. He's going to come on next week and talk about the 0G draft strategy that we had posted about earlier this week. So really excited to have him on. We really appreciate it. Definitely, you know, if you're a listener, tune in next week for that one. And that'll be the wrap-up of the series. And then we'll continue on to some other stuff there. Draft-relevant stuff for the upcoming season. So should be fun. But with that, let's go through the hockey news here. So Joe Thornton signed a one-year contract with the Florida Panthers for a league minimum $750,000. A little bit surprising, I guess. I didn't see that one coming. Not in Florida, anyway.
No, I didn't either. But have to kind of wonder, though, right? So the Leafs had him to the minimum last year, and arguably, him, Wayne Simmonds, and Jason Spezza were their best line in the playoffs. So that tells you a little bit about the Leafs team. So it's a little surprising and not surprising at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he obviously feels that he's going to have a better chance playing in Florida than they did in Toronto.
Most definitely.
Yeah, and possibly a better chance to win, too. That Florida team looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that top six is stacked.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, UC Soros and the Nashville Predators agreed to a four-year contract, $20 million, $5 million AAV, avoiding contract arbitration. Not unexpected. UC Soros is probably on a lot of people's radar for next season after the way he finished last year.
Definitely.
You know, that Predators team I'm not super keen on, but he's one hell of a goalie anyway. Austin Matthews is going to be out in a minimum of 6 weeks after wrist surgery. He's expected to miss the start of training camp. I don't expect this is going to affect his ADP very much this fall.
No, probably not.
I think he's still going to go where he's going to go and just keep that in mind. Kevin Fiala and the Minnesota Wild settled on a one-year, $5.1 million contract to avoid arbitration. Kind of just fell in the middle between, I think, what he was looking for and what the arbitration award was. So that's good to see. They really need him back, obviously. Some big news this week. So the two final things here. The Arizona Coyotes need to vacate Gila River Arena at the end of 2020-2021. The city of Glendale stated publicly that they will not be renewing the lease. Is this truth or negotiation tactic, guys? What do you think?
All I'm saying is the Saskatchewan Coyotes.
I love it.
I think it works. I think it works.
It's a horrible name.
Hey, it's Saskatchewan. We have Coyotes in Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan Coyotes.
Well,
could be worse.
Yeah, but everyone hates
Coyotes. Could be the Saskatchewan Gophers.
I don't care what you call them. If we can get an NHL franchise in Saskatchewan, you call them whatever you want.
The Saskatchewan Center isn't doing a whole lot right now, so you know it could use some hockey.
Well, and it's probably not going to be our main rink for too much longer, right? I mean, they've been talking about building a new rink downtown for a while now, so
for sure,
hopefully that comes to fruition eventually. So I guess on that topic here, guys, where do you think the Yotes are going to play in 2022-2023? My money's on Houston. What do you guys think?
Ooh,
I think they'll end up staying somewhere in Arizona. I don't think Gary Bettman's going to let him leave the state of Arizona.
I think he's licking his chops. Yeah, I think he's licking his chops for Houston. He's going, I want that TV market.
But that's what they said about Arizona.
I guess, but it's...
When they originally created the Phoenix Coyotes, it was all about the demographic market there, right?
And, yeah.
And, well, it hasn't been the team's fault that ownership and everything there has been a train wreck since the team moved from basically Winnipeg, right? So...
Yeah. But I guess my theory would be that Texas has shown hockey works there with the Dallas Stars. And I think, you know, if you could create some sort of an in-state rivalry between Dallas and Houston, big population, big TV market, that'd be interesting.
Like I said, the Saskatchewan Coyotes, because we know that he's not going to put a team down east because they can't go into Hamilton or Quebec City because that's too close to the Leafs and the Canadiens, so you can't jeopardize that. So Saskatchewan's perfect. There's no team here. Everybody here is kind of jaded in who they like anyway, so let's just put the team here.
Well, we can only hope that Gary Bettman's listening, and he will take our advice.
Absolutely.
John, what do you think? Where are they playing?
As much as I like Bruce's idea, I'm with you. I think they're going to keep it down in the U.S. there, and definitely in Texas, it seems like a viable option. And like you say, getting a good Dallas rivalry in there, that'd be fantastic for the NHL and TV rights and everything.
Okay. Last bit of news here. Henrik Lundqvist announced his retirement officially. Probably one of the best goaltenders of the past decade or more. He was a workhorse fantasy goalie for a long time. I'll just run quickly through some of his career numbers here. So over 15 years, 459 wins, a 2.43 goals against average, 918 save percentage, and 64 shutouts. In the playoffs, he was 61-67 with a 2.3 goals against average and a 921 save percentage with 10 shutouts. He's sixth all-time in wins, seventh in saves, eighth in games played, ninth in starts, and 17th in shutouts. Where do you guys put him all time? Is he a top five or a top 10 goaltender for you?
I'd say top 10. I don't think I'd give him top five, but top 10 I would.
Yeah, I'd have to look close to the numbers, but I think top 10 is probably where I'd put him too.
Yeah, definitely for me too. I wouldn't put him anywhere near top five, but I'd say in that upper 10 range would be about right.
And he's done a lot for that New York market, right? He's been the guy. He's been King Henrik, right, for the last 10 or 15 years. So,
for sure.
Good to see him. Well, unfortunate to see him retire, I guess, but just he's had a heck of a career. So, okay. With that, guys, let's move on here then to our How to Win Your Fantasy Hockey League series, Guide to Defensemen. Similar to what we've done in the past year, so we're going to run through tiers of defensemen, tier 0 through tier 3. They're ranked by fantasy points per game over the past three seasons using ESPN's standard scoring system. But we did include hits, PIMs, and block shots. And so we'll go on from there. So starting with tier 0, that's 2.85 fantasy points per game or higher. Consider those franchise or superstar defensemen, true elite number one defensemen. There's not a lot of them in the league. So the top five defensemen are going to be off the board by round five, probably, guys, you think? That's kind of where I think they're going to shake out. But there is plenty of value to be had. So you should you decide to wait until round five or later to draft your team's number one defenseman. There's lots of options out there. So don't feel like you have to grab Cale Makar. Although we know Bruce is going to.
Ooh, me?
Yeah, we know Bruce. We know he's your guy. It's okay.
You've given that up the last couple weeks.
We know.
Did I? Really? Was that obvious?
Oh yeah. We know you love Cale Makar. And we do too. We do too. So we're going to start off actually with John Carlson though, because over the past three seasons, only Keith Yandel has produced more power play points than John Carlson, and only Dougie Hamilton and Roman Josi have more even strength goals than Carlson. So he had 31 even strength goals over the past three seasons. In total, he's the overall leader in terms of points, 189 points in 201 games. And he's your leader in points per game played as well at 0.94. With 2.5 shots on goal per game, he was 13th among defensemen. He had 341 blocks, 72 PIMs, and he provides some good category coverage just in general. So with Ovi being locked up his spot secured on power play one, expect another solid season out of him. I just a solid fantasy contributor. You kind of know what to expect out of him. Any other thoughts on John Carlson, guys? What do you think there? Like I'm not saying he's Cale Makar. Like he's probably going to go behind Cale Makar and Victor Hedman, but he's been a very productive defenseman offensively, right?
Well, you look at, was it two seasons ago? He was pretty much at a point per game pace there till that was not COVID, but that was the season before COVID, I think.
Yeah. I think he was up for his team was pushing hard for him to win the Norris, right? That year that he was over a point per game or at a point per game. So I found that surprising. I didn't really know before I started putting the numbers together that John Carlson was going to be the fantasy points per game leader, but there you have it.
Yeah.
Sorry, John.
Sorry, I was just wanted to say that he you know, when you pick him, you're getting a solid pick. He's not going to steer you wrong. He's just consistent every year, it seems now, for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's been fantastic. He's been great. Once he took over that mean role from Mike Green, he hasn't relinquished it. And
nope.
I just see good things coming from him for again. Sure.
And pretty reliable in terms of health too, right? He hasn't missed a ton of games. I think he had the one season a few years back, but other than that, he's been pretty healthy. So yeah, good solid pick. What do you guys think here for the over-under? I've got 15 goals and 70 points. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm going to take the over.
I was going to
say, John, under. You're taking the over, and Bruce, you're taking?
I was going to go under.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to take the over. I think just with Ovi, he's gunning for that goal-scoring record, and he's going to do a lot of damage on the power play. And I think John Carlson's going to, I think he'll do his 15 goals and might only be 72 points or something, but I think he'll be over 70 points.
It'll be close. Yep.
Okay. That's our take on John Carlson. Next up is Bruce's boy, Cale Makar. So his 2020 ADP was 26.3, and his fantasy points per game over the past three seasons was 3.58. Yeah, he's almost certainly going to be the first defenseman off the board next season. Just ask Bruce. With 44 points, 8 goals, and 44 games played. What's that, Bruce?
He'll be the second. Tyler will take Barry first.
And then
Makar second.
You know what? It sounds like, just quickly here, it sounds like Tyler's actually going to try and jump on the podcast next week. So he'll be able to come on and maybe defend himself a little bit.
Defend himself?
I told him he had to go back and listen to some of the episodes so he could actually hear what we're saying about him. So, Makar was actually the points per game leader for defensemen. And next year should be no different, right? He's an unquestioned power play quarterback. He's got a 68% power play share. On a unit that features Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, Gabriel Landeskog, and Nazem Kadri. Also encouraging, Makar's shot rate jumped from 2.1 shots on goal per game to 2.4 shots on goal per game last season. His shooting percentage was actually lower in 2020-2021 at 7.7% versus 9.9% the year prior. His secondary assist percentage was low at 38.9%, and his IPP was stable at 53.7%. It was 54% the year prior. So we know what Makar can do, I think. He's got a solid team around him, one of the best in the league. Are you guys taking the over or under on 20 goals and 82 points?
Over.
I'm not surprised, Bruce.
I'm actually going to take the under on that one.
Okay. I'm going to take the over. I don't know if he'll score more than 20 goals, but I think he could be at 80, 85 points. Like I wouldn't be shocked. As long as he stays healthy, right?
That's the thing, right? So last season he had a couple of stints on the injured list. If he can stay healthy and play all 82 games, he'll be over. If he can't stay healthy and he misses, yeah, he's not going to make that. But if he can stay healthy, yeah, he's going to be a point per game or better player.
Like I have no question in my mind that he's going to produce at over an 82 game point pace. But it's just a matter of, does he actually play 82 games and put up those points? So,
yeah.
Okay. Next, let's move on to Dougie Hamilton. So, obviously, we all know he signed that deal in New Jersey in the offseason here. Last year, his ADP was 40.1, and his fantasy points per game over the past three seasons was 3.22. So, no other defenseman has scored more goals with 42 over the past three seasons than Dougie Hamilton. His shot rate, 3.3 shots on goal per game, and shooting percentage, 5.6%, were both down last year compared to 2019-2020, where he put up 3.6 shots on goal per game and an 8.2 shooting percentage. So he may have more to offer next season if we see some positive regression in those numbers, if he shoots a bit more and if his shooting percentage comes up. Obviously, now being in New Jersey and not Carolina, I don't think that's far from guaranteed, right? Like the offense there is not quite what it was in Carolina. But I still think on that line with Tatar, Hughes, Sharangovich, and Ryan Graves, and he's going to get 70% power play share or better, he should put up similar numbers. What do you guys think?
It's all going to be how he fits in there in Jersey, right? So I think 62 points is doable for him.
Yeah, we had the over-under
here. I don't know if I'd go over on that, but...
Okay, so yeah, we set the over-under at 20 goals and 62 points. So you're saying push Bruce, or...?
I'll say under, but not like just under.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna take. Oh God, I don't know. I'm gonna take the over. Just I think he'll score 20 goals. He might be at 50 points though, 55 points. What do you think, John?
I think he's either gonna do really well or really terrible. I just don't know which way it's gonna go. I think I'm gonna take the over on it too.
I guess what appeals me is we've talked about Thomas Tatar in the past, how good he is at even strength in terms of goal scoring and point production. Yep. And then Jack Hughes, right? We'd put out that post, was it last week or the week before, talking about his underlying numbers, and a lot of people are expecting Jack Hughes to break out next year. So if he can figure it out, and if Hamilton's feeding the puck to him on the rush or on the power play, I got to think he's going to put up his 20 goals and 60 some points, but...
Yeah, I think he'll do well.
But it's also his first year in a new market, right? And that a lot of guys, players, defensemen or otherwise, do struggle with that. So that's a good point by you, Bruce, that he just depends on how he adjusts there.
Yeah.
Okay. Alex Pietrangelo, he had a very good playoff last year. I think we talked about him a lot when we're going through our DFS picks and stuff through the playoffs. But his 2020 ADP was 41.4, and his fantasy points per game over the past three seasons was 2.98. He put up 12 points, 4 goals in 19 games in the playoffs, as well as 52 blocks and 76 shots on goal. That's a 4.0 shots on goal per game rate, which is incredible. And he played over 25 minutes a game, so he really looked like the number one guy there in Vegas in the playoffs. He had a 56.5% power play share, which a lot of us kind of thought Theodore was going to get more of that power play time, but Pietrangelo got quite a bit of it. Our expectation, I think, guys, here is that we're going to see him closer to his three-year average of 52 points and 16 goals. So are you taking the over or under on 16 goals and 52 points?
I'm going to say under. Only reason why I'm going to say under is I think Theodore is going to take another step again this season. Because, again, in that power play, no one really... In the playoffs, Pietrangelo played more, but they never really... Their power play is kind of... What's the word for it? Meh. It's not a dominant Trash. Power play like Colorado's is. So they're going to go...
No, it was horrible.
I was trying to be nice. So I think it's going to go back and forth between Pietrangelo and Theodore. They're going to go whoever's hot at the time is who they're going to go with. So he could make it to 52, but I think you're going to see Theodore's point totals jump, and Pietrangelo's may hold in that 50 or sub-50 range, and I think you'll see Theodore's come up again.
So for next season then, are you going to try and handcuff Theodore by grabbing Pietrangelo? Like, I'm assuming you're going to take Theodore of the two defensemen. Is that your pick?
I would take Theodore over, or Pietrangelo myself.
Okay. And John, for you, are you going to take which one of those guys you like more for next season?
Pietrangelo. To me, he's always been the better defenseman. And I personally don't see that changing. Just the way he was playing in the playoffs, he played fantastic. Yeah, that power play was garbage, but I see good things from him again.
Yeah, I just the shot rate blows me away, and he's still covering block shots as well and points and goals, and so I really like Pietrangelo, but I also really like Shea Theodore too, so for me, I would probably try and handcuff them, and if I could draft them both, that's what I would do. But this is good. I like when we don't all just agree. So, more of this, Bruce, is good. Okay, so I didn't ask you, John. Are you going? You're going over on the 16 goals and 52 points? I'm going to take the over.
I think you're almost. Yeah, I'm going to say over, but I think you're pretty much bang on with that. 16 goal, 52
Yeah, points. That's what I expect. I think he'll be right around that mark, but if I'm going over-under, I'll take the over.
Yeah. You make these difficult because they're like bang on what you think they should be.
Well, that's kind of the point. That's how the whole betting thing works, right?
Yeah, I know, but I just don't like
it. I know. I'm sorry. But okay, let's move on to Adam Fox then. 2020 ADP of 123.3 and fantasy points per game of 2.86 for the past 3 years. Last season, he produces 47 points, 5 goals. That was a 70-point pace in 55 games en route to winning the Norris Trophy. If you saw the NHL Network's take, he's a breakout candidate next year, guys. He's a Norris Trophy winner, but he's a sneaky pick, so watch out. He saw a shot rate go up slightly in 2020-2021 at 1.9 shots on goal per game, but he's not a volume shooter. His shooting percentage dipped to 4.9% from 6.4, so we could see a bump in goals next season if his shooting percentage does see some positive regression. With D'Angelo gone, Fox also saw a massive bump in power play percentage, where he receives 70.6% of the power play versus 37.2 the year before. His secondary assist percentage was higher last year as well, at 54.8% versus 41% the year before that. So we could see a pullback in assists, but I guess, guys, we like Adam Fox. His three-year average is 59 points, 9 goals, and we expect to see something closer to last year's 70-point pace. So are you guys going to take the over or under on 10 goals and 65 points?
Over.
Agreed. I'm taking the over on that one, too.
Yeah, and if Jack Eichel ends up in New York, then really watch out.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so too. There's a couple things there, like I said, the shooting percentage, I think will come up a bit, and he's got some confidence now, right? As the reigning Norris Trophy winner, and he's on a good team with Panarin and all these other guys, Zibanejad. Yeah, no, we like Adam Fox. I'll take the over on that one. Moving on to tier one now. So we've got 2.5 to 2.85 fantasy points per game. These are still elite defensemen, but not in that, I guess, special category. They're not Cale Makar. They're not Adam Fox. So, but still, definitely, these are guys you want to have. So first up is Darnell Nurse, 2020 ADP of 106.5, 2.85 fantasy points per game over the past 3 seasons. Last year, Darnell had a career year and then got paid for it, like many defensemen in the offseason here. He's our top-ranked defenseman in Tier 1, thanks to his category coverage and even-strength production. Among all defensemen over the past 3 seasons, Nurse ranked 4th in PIMS, 5th in even-strength goals, 7th in even-strength points, 11th in hits, 11th in blocks, and 15th in shots on goal per game. With Barry and Bouchard on the roster, and Clefbaum previously, Nurse will very likely just receive power play 2 duties, and that's really what's preventing him from being a tier zero or a true number one fantasy D-man, right, guys? If he was on power play 1, he'd probably be much higher on this list.
Yep. Yeah, because he's got Barry ahead of him and Bouchard nipping at his feet, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so his upside's kind of limited that way just based on the PowerPoint production, but all that said, the over-under is 15 goals and 45 points for next year. What do you guys think?
I think he'll be over.
Okay.
Yeah, in my mind, he's an absolute workhorse, and I'm seeing good things from him again, so I'm going over on him too.
Yeah, I think we all kind of expect a big year out of McDavid again. We'll have to see who he plays with at even strength too. I don't know if it's going to be Barry again, or if they're going to try and put Bouchard up on that line, or what happens, but it'll be interesting to see. But that category coverage, and yeah, I think he's capable of putting... I'll take the over on that one too, so. Next, let's move on to Aaron Ekblad here. 2020 ADP of 133.6 and a 2.49 fantasy points per game over the past 3 seasons. He had a career-best points per game pace last year at 0.63 before he went down with injury. He saw 72.4% power play share, now he's the guy in Florida, right? He hadn't had that in his career previously, but now he's getting the power play time and he's the guy. He obliterated his career best shot rate, producing 2.9 shots on goal per game. His career average before that was 2.4, and his 3-year average was 2.3 shots on goal per game. So good to see there. If he can stay healthy, we kind of expect at least 50 points next year, right? Like we're looking at the over-under is 16 goals and 50 points. What do you guys like there, over-under?
I think you have to go over there. With the way that top six is stacked, whether you like power play one and power play two will end up being, could be a power play one on another team. Like it's...
They're deep.
There's going to be points there, whether it's Ekblad or you look at Uyghur further down the list. They're both going to put up points. So yeah, I'd say over.
Okay, John?
Yeah, I'm with Bruce on this one, just based on the rest of the lineup there. I see there's no way he's going to go under 50 points.
Yep, we'll all agree, over 50 points. And I think Mackenzie Uyghur pairing with him next year at even strength, I think the two of them are going to do some damage, right? And definitely, you put them with Barkov in that line, they're going to be very good. This next one here I think is pretty interesting. You guys might disagree, but so Charlie McAvoy is our next guy here. His 2020 ADP was 109.3, and his fantasy points per game over the past 3 years was 2.44. He was on pace for 48 points, 0.59 points per game, which is the highest of his career. He put up 30 points, 5 goals, and 51 games played, and he put up his highest shot rate to date at 1.8 shots on goal per game. Despite a depressed shooting percentage of 5.4%, his career average is 6.9%, and his three-year average is 6.3. He managed to produce some career numbers here, which is great to see. The expectation, I think, for most fantasy managers, guys, is he's going to take over power play one. Like we saw in the playoffs here, he put up 12 points in 11 games and took a massive step forward in terms of offensive production. I think he was getting, 67.3% power play share during the playoffs, where he played over 26 minutes a game and he had an IPP of 52.2. So he had a bit of a breakout there in the playoffs. The over-under, I've got 8 goals and 50 points. You guys taking the over-under for Charlie McAvoy?
I'm going to say under because I'm not convinced they're going to keep him at power play one.
That was my next question. Okay, so you think it'll be a bit muddled there, Bruce?
I think so because they've got the young kid there. He had...
Greslick?
Yeah, so he was getting the majority of the time, but he was injured a lot too, so... McAvoy filled in, and he filled in well for him. But as soon as he came back, McAvoy was moved off. So
yeah,
a lot of it's going to depend on that, if they're going to go with McAvoy or if they're going to try and ease his minutes a bit and let the other young guy play on the power play. So that's kind of where, I don't know.
No, that's fair. I mean, a lot of people aren't quite sure. I personally think... To me, it was telling that they gave him all that power play time during the playoffs, and I think they now trust him on the power play, and he produced there, right? I think he had 8 power play points in 12 games, which we've never seen from McAvoy before, right? So it's a small sample, but he's a guy I'll probably take a swing at some point in drafts this fall. But John, what do you think? Are you taking the over or under on McAvoy?
I'm taking the over only because of what he did in the playoffs there with the opportunity he was given on PP1. I think he has a chance to stay on that PP1, and if he does, I'm fairly safe on the over. If he doesn't stay PP1, probably under, but I'm fairly confident he's going to have a chance to go over on that.
Yeah, and if he does, if he sticks on power play one, like we all know how good that power play is, right, with Pasternak and Marchand and Bergeron. So something to keep an eye on. I guess really, depending on when your draft is, if you can keep an eye on those things during training camp, usually you get some sort of indication as to which way the team's leaning, at least initially. But I'll take the over as well. So good stuff. Next up, we got Zach Werenski, 2020 ADP of 86.9 and fantasy points per game of 2.55 over the last 3 seasons. Over the last 3 years, Werenski ranks 4th in even strength goals, behind only Dougie Hamilton, Roman Josi, and John Carlson. Lingering injuries last season played a part in Werenski's reduced production, particularly his shot rate at 2.3 shots on goal per game, whereas he had 3.0 shots on goal per game the year before. But now Seth Jones is gone, traded to Chicago. Power play one duty is going to fall to Werenski, and it sounds like he's motivated to show everybody that his production wasn't based on Seth Jones. He's also got Adam Boqvist as his partner and the newly acquired Jakub Voracek, as well as Jack Roslovic and Patrick Laine at 5-on-5. So I think some good offensive potential there. Note, he's not a huge contributor of peripheral categories, hits, blocks, or PIMs. His 3-year average is 48 points, 17 goals, 98 shots on goal. So he puts up goals and not a lot of peripheral categories. But do you guys like the over or under on 20 goals and 50 points?
I'm going under.
You don't like him, hey?
It's not that I don't like him. The team around him isn't very good. So I don't know if you're going to see that much.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, you've got Laine, but Laine didn't do much last year. Voracek is...
I think he was a point per game last year, but that's also in Philly, right? So
yeah, and that team was... They had 3 stacked lines in Philly last year, so...
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, that's totally fair. I like Werenski just based on his even strength production. And I think part of it too, Bruce, is the value. I think you can get Werenski later in the draft relative to some of these other guys who are putting up similar or even or lesser numbers, right?
Yeah, as a later round pick, I think so. But I think his ADP listed there, he won't. I would be surprised if he went at that, if that ADP this season. I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I think he'll go a bit higher. He might go a round or two higher, right?
I don't know. I was thinking lower, but.
Oh, okay. I think with Seth Jones now, his value's gone up, right? Like, because now he does possibly get power play one. That's kind of, but yeah, this is good. Again, Bruce, you don't totally agree, so I like this. This is good. John, what do you think? What's your take? Over, under, and what do you think of Werenski for next season?
I'm going to take the under on this one as well. Fantastic guy. I got no problem with drafting him. Like you say, he is, he's in for some more action there with Seth Jones being gone. But like you say, it's the rest of that team that scares me a little bit. So I'm on the fence on that one. But yeah, I think we're going to go under on this one.
Okay. Fair enough. Next, let's move on to Miro Heiskanen. 2020 ADP of 64.6, and his fantasy points per game is just 2.08 over the past 3 years. Excuse me. He had his breakout season during the 2019-2020 playoffs where he put up 26 points, so 6 goals. He's on a 79-point pace in 27 games. He followed that up with another average, I guess, for him type season, putting up 27 points and 8 goals where he was on a 40-point pace in 55 games. The problem for Heiskanen has been and always is that going to be that John Klingberg still is on power play one most of the time, right? And Heiskanen did see a 57.9% power play share last year, and it's continued to increase each year. So it kind of looks like Dallas is moving him closer to being that number one D-man for the team. But as long as Klingberg continues to produce on that power play, I kind of question, you know, if Heiskanen's ever really going to break through. He will. I just, you know, when's it going to happen, right? I would say expect Heiskanen to go a bit higher than his 2020 ADP, but also expect to see a boost in production because Dallas is healthy next year. So Tyler Seguin and Radulov are back. Breakout Jason Robertson's there, Joe Pavelski. And I think this is the big one for me. Ryan Suter on his left side, pairing with Ryan Suter at even strength, is going to allow Heiskanen to stretch his legs a bit offensively. I think Ryan Suter can take over some of that defensive responsibility. And because of it, you'll probably see a bit more offensive production out of Heiskanen, for sure at even strength. And then if he gets more of a shot on the power play, he could be a great pickup for next year. So the over-under I've got here is 12 goals and 50 points. What do you guys like? What do you think?
I think over. He's slowly been taking power play time away from Klingberg. And part of that, too, is Klingberg the past few seasons had a bit of an injury history, too, now. So he's not playing a full season, so I'm pretty sure that Heiskanen will go over 50 points.
Okay. And he's the guy. You're taking him over Klingberg next year.
I would. Yeah, I take Heiskanen over. And then there was, I don't know how much of a rumor it was. It's just something I read, but there was talk that they were trying to trade Klingberg too. So,
yeah, I'd heard that too. I think they know they've got their number one defenseman there, right?
I think he's only 22, too. He's young, right? So
yeah. John?
I'm going to take the over on this one as well. I like the game he plays. It's a solid game. He puts up a decent amount of points like he's showed in that one playoffs, the 26 points in 27 games. A little bit of a downer this last year just compared to that. But, yeah, I see him doing well, and I'm going to take the over on that.
Yeah, I think if you drafted him last year at an average of 64, you were disappointed with the production you saw from him, right? But, yeah, no, he's a great defenseman. I think he's going to do well next year. That team looks pretty good, and I'm going to take the over as well on 12 goals and 50 points. So that wraps up tier one. Let's go on to tier two here. This is 2.0 to 2.5 fantasy points per game. These are essentially top four defensemen. Probably going to find some value picks in here, guys you can grab a little bit later in your draft, but it's still going to produce, put up some pretty good offense. So first off, we have Jared Spurgeon. 2020 ADP of 140.3, and his fantasy points per game over the past three seasons is 2.42. He saw a dip in his overall shot rate last year at 1.7 shots on goal per game. He was 1.8 the year prior and 1.9 two seasons before that. His shooting percentage, 7.4% versus 9.2 as his three-year average. So if he can get his shot volume up and his shooting percentage up a little bit, you'll see some more out of him. He received a 54.1% power play share last year, the most he's received since 2012-2013, and you can routinely expect close to 150 block shots and 150 shots on goal, 85 hits, and roughly 40 points. So some pretty good category coverage, playing on a good team. He's the captain. He's going to be relied upon. He's a good to great value pick based on his ADP, his power play deployment, and the young talent around him. Do you guys like the over or under on 12 goals and 42 points?
I'm going to say over. I'm going to say over, but it won't be much over. It'll be just barely over.
Okay. John?
I agree with Bruce 100%. It'll be over. It'll be just over, though. I know I've drafted him in the past. He's been solid. I've been really happy with his output, and I don't see that changing, but yeah, no, I'm going to take the over on this one, but it won't be by a whole lot.
I'm just pulling up his numbers here. So has he ever cleared 50 points? It doesn't look like it. I think his career high is 43 points in 2018-2019 at 14 goals and 29 assists. He was on a 50-point pace in 2017-18. So, yeah, I mean, I'll take the under, although I would not be surprised if he puts up 12 goals and 50 points. But
I guess the question is, for power play one, was it Suter that always played power play one for Minnesota?
We can check. Well, one second.
Because on the spreadsheet here, so Suter is just slightly below both Spurgeon and Dumba. So that'll kind of see where that shakes out too. So if.
Yeah. Well, he had 54% of the power play last season, which is the highest he's received, like I said, since 2012. So he was playing nearly 3 minutes on the power play. Like he's getting, I would say, number one defenseman time on the power play. And for this upcoming season, I think, like, is there really another option? Like, Dumba would be the other one.
I think Dumba would be the only other option.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be Spurgeon, at least to start on power play one. Based on that, I could also look at his player usage chart just to see. So his offensive zone starts is right at 50%. So they weren't really leaning on him one way or the other. Suter got it a bit more in terms. He was at 52%. And Dumba was actually less than 50% offensive zone starts. So, yeah, it looks like Spurgeon's going to get that role. His numbers look good. Analytics, his goals for percentage and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd expect him to be that guy. Okay, let's go on to Vince Dunn. I think we all like Vince Dunn for next year playing in Seattle. His ADP in 2020 was 201, and his fantasy points per game was 1.97 over the past 3 years. It's no secret he's buried in the depth chart in St. Louis. He still managed to show some offensive upside last season with 0.47 points per game, good enough for a 38-point pace. With his new home in Seattle and the opportunity for more playing time, particularly in the power play, Dunn is poised for a breakout season, in our opinion. In the third and fourth quarter of last season, Dunn had a stretch of games where he put up 11 points in 16 games, which good enough for a 56-point pace over that stretch. He was playing under 20 minutes a game and around 135 on the power play. So I think if he actually gets a fair shake on the power play in Seattle, which I wouldn't be surprised if he did, looking at the options there, he should have a productive season. His over or under we've set here at 12 goals and 40 points. What do you guys like?
Oh, it's all going to depend on deployment. If he gets good deployment, it'll be over. If he doesn't get the deployment, he'll be under.
Okay. What are you banking on?
I think he's right now, if you look at on Daily Faceoff, they're projecting him in power play two. So if it stays like that, he'll be under.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like, they still have Giordano there for next season. Yeah. And I think we listed Giordano as one of our bounce back candidates for next year, right? That's in the show notes here too. But yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, yeah, maybe they do give Giordano that power play one time to start. And maybe Dunn is a...
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, right? So if they put Giordano out there first and it doesn't go well and they move Dunn up and it goes well, then yeah, I don't think 40 points is definitely not out of the realm of possibility, especially playing in the Pacific Division.
Yeah. No, it depends if he gets that time or not. Yeah.
But it's for a late round, I'd definitely pick him up in terms of late round. The potential's there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure is. And at that ADP, like you said, he's a really good 4, 5, 6 defenseman for your fantasy roster.
Yep.
John, what do you think? What's your take on Dunn?
I'm going to take the over. I think he's going to get the opportunities, and he's going to capitalize on them. I take him over Giordano.
Okay, interesting. Interesting. Couldn't fault you for that take. Because we saw last year in Calgary, Giordano lost power play one time to Rasmus Anderson.
Yep.
And he's 37 years old.
Yep, he's not getting any younger.
You got to risk it to get the biscuit, John, and I like your take. I'm probably going to take Dunn ahead of Giordano next season, too. Beautiful. Okay. Yeah, I'll take the over as well. So let's move on then. Mackenzie Weegar here. Again, we're talking about this guy mostly because of his 5-on-5 production from last season after Ekblad went down with injury. But he was undrafted in 2020. His fantasy points per game is at 2.21, though. So he's still been productive. He led all defensemen at even strength points in 2020-2021. He was third at 5-on-5. He finished the season with 36 points, 6 goals, 55-point pace over 82 games, 101 shots on goal, good enough for a 1.9 shots on goal per game rate, 118 hits, 45 PIMs, plus 29, 83 blocks, 22.07 average time on ice. Expected to play with Ekblad, like we said, along with Barkov, Reinhardt, and Carter Verhaeghe. That's some pretty good company he's going to play with. Bound to get some points one or the other. He may also get some power play two time with Patrick Hornquist, Verhaeghe, Owen Tippett, and Mason Marchment or Frank Vetrano. So, yeah, I guess, you know, draft this guy, but don't expect much in terms of power play production. The over-under here is 8 goals and 45 points. What do you guys think?
I think it'll be just under that. It'll be like 40, 41 is where he'll end up.
I'm going to take the under, too. This is the first one I think I'm taking the under on. But yeah, I'll take the under on Mackenzie Weegar. I'm just not 100% sold if Ekblad's healthy, so... And sorry, John, before you go ahead, I think his ADP is going to be inflated too. I think a lot of people are going to look at what he did last season and expect more of the same, and that's just not going to happen. So, John, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to agree to all of the above there. He's definitely inflated. And just based on the team around him, if he gets anywhere close to those numbers, I'm basing it solely on their performance. I don't see him being top talent, but the rest of the team is. So,
okay, good stuff. With that, let's move on to Philip Roenick. I was torn as to whether or not we should even include him in kind of our feature here, but mostly being that Detroit is not the most appealing fantasy destination, but somebody's got to play the number one defenseman role on that team, right? So he's been deployed as such, as the number one guy there, playing 23-plus minutes a game, 54%-plus power play share, and he had the best Corsi 4 percentage among Red Wing defensemen. He also played the toughest competition. Dylan Larkin and Tyler Bertuzzi should be healthy to start the year. And the newly acquired Verona, who we've given plenty of love on this podcast for, but I think that top line is going to produce, and Roenick's going to get to play with him at 5-on-5. And on the power play. I think he's going to get first crack at the power play, despite having Troy Stetcher and Nick Leddy and whoever else there. But the over-under here, we've got 9 goals and 50 points. What do you guys think?
Oh, boy.
And sorry, before you go ahead, Bruce, the other thing I should mention here is he had a career-low shooting percentage last year at 1.8%. So that there's bound to be some positive regression there.
Yeah. You know what? I think I'm going to go with the over, but just barely over.
Okay. John?
I'm going to go with the under on that one. I don't see a whole lot of good happening out there. I don't know what else to say. I'm just going to take the under on it.
I'll take the under as well. I think there's some potential there, but a lot of things could go wrong if they decide to mess that power play, if they do give it to Nick Leddy. Like, we just don't know. I'm not really high on Detroit this year. So if you can get him late in the draft, you know, if he's in one of the last 5 rounds, you can snag him as your 6th defenseman or something, then go for it. But I'm not real high on Roenick anyway. So that takes us to tier 3. And as we kind of mentioned before, guys, this is a bit of a train wreck. We don't really know what to do with tier 3 here. This is 2 fantasy points per game or less. These are kind of average or replacement level players, but this is where you also might find some gold nuggets, right? This is kind of like where your risky plays are for the most part. So the first guy we've got here is Jamie Drysdale from Anaheim. He obviously was undrafted last year. His fantasy points per game for the past 3 years is 1.34, excuse me. We've only got a small sample size to work with, but he's got pedigree. He was drafted 6th overall in 2020, and his upside is 70-point potential, according to Dauber Hockey. He's playing for a team with limited offensive options on defense, so he's going to get opportunity on the power play and all that kind of stuff at even strength. He's probably going to play with Trevor Zegras at 5-on-5. In 24 games last season, he had played just under 20 minutes and received 52.2% share on the power play. He had a low shot volume at 1.2 shots on goal per game, but he did manage to score 3 goals and was on pace for 27 points. So I would say he's probably worth a late round flyer, or at least keep him on your watch list. And if he does start to produce some points offensively in the early goings of the year, don't be afraid to grab him off the wire. Oddshark actually has Drysdale at plus 2,000 to win the Calder. Caulfield was the favorite at plus 115. So he's kind of on the radar. The over-under here is 10 goals and 30 points. What do you guys think?
I think he's going to be way over 30 points.
Okay. I think these numbers, Bruce, are based on just such a small sample size, right? We don't know what to expect quite yet, but I wouldn't doubt that.
He only played a handful of games at the end of last season, so I think he's going to be well over 30 points.
Okay. No, that's fair. John?
I'm with Bruce. It was a small sample size, but I think he's going to be well over 30 as well. I see some good things coming from the young talent in Anaheim there, so yeah, I'll take over.
I'll take the over too. The only thing I don't like is a shot volume. I know Cam Fowler early in his career and still to this day doesn't have a lot of shot volume, right? So, I mean, obviously if you don't shoot the puck, you can't score goals. but that could just be, you know, lots of guys will shoot more as they move along. So, and again, value pick late in your draft could be a guy that helps win your league, right?
Yep.
Next up, we've got Evan Bouchard, which of course all three of us love. 2020 ADP was undrafted. Fantasy points per game. Basically, I've got NA here because there's just not enough data. He only played, I think it was 14 games last year. It's low. I think actually, Bruce, do you have the spreadsheet handy there?
For Bouchard?
Yes. So I'm trying to think.
Bouchard.
1.71, actually. That's what I have here. Fantasy points per game.
Yeah, well, yes.
So, okay. So my apologies. Yeah, again, 21 games played. That's kind of his number there. So he's an offensively gifted defenseman with high upside. But where Drysdale is going to have all the opportunity, Bouchard is fighting for playing time. With Barry re-signed, it's unlikely we see him get top power play minutes unless there's an injury. And most of his production is going to have to come at 5-on-5. We don't know yet if he's going to play on the top pairing with Nurse or if he's going to get buried on the third line with Cuckoo or Chris Russell. So a lot of things up in the air, but if he does get some playing time with Nurse 5-on-5, which he's been training with this summer, that opens up some real possibilities. A few encouraging notes here. Bouchard's shot rate jumped from 1.4 shots on goal in 2018-2019 to 2.7 shots on goal last season. His shooting percentage also came down to a more reasonable 5.3% last year, and he still managed to put up 5 points, 2 goals in 14 games played. So again, monitor deployment in camp to kind of see where things are headed with him. But Dave Tippett did mention in one of his interviews recently, I think it was on the DFO Rundown podcast, that Bouchard is a very important piece for the Oilers next year. So I think he's going to get some opportunity. He's kind of a wild card, but the over-under here is 10 goals and 30 points. What do you guys think?
I don't think he'll quite get there. He'll probably get it. I think it'll be between 25 and 30. But again, it all depends. It'll depend on his deployment, but I'm thinking 25 to 30.
Okay. John?
I agree. It all depends on deployment there. But yeah, I think Bruce hit it on the head there, 25 to 30. I am going to take the under on that one as well.
I'm going to take the over just to be different. I think he might be at 35 points. I don't know if he's going to be really high, but I think this is just the year, right? They kind of got to see what they have with Bouchard. And based on some of the comments from Tippett, I would not be surprised at all if he did get some first line time with Darnell Nurse. So take that for what it's worth. But next up, we got Adam Boqvist from Columbus. Undrafted last year in fantasy, 1.34 fantasy points per game over the last three seasons. Werenski's the guy in Columbus, but by all accounts, he is very motivated, like we said. And I think playing with a motivated Werenski is going to help Boqvist's production as well. Boqvist was on a 37-point pace last season. The problem is that he received 61% power play share and half of his total points. So eight of his 16 points came on the power play last year. And his secondary assist percentage was 85.7%. So keep that in mind. Like Boqvist, he's going to get first pairing minutes, but some of those numbers are kind of ugly, and he's not going to get a ton of power play time in Columbus. He's probably going to be closer to that 35% power play share. So keeping that in mind, he is going to play on that top pair. Like I said, he's going to play with Laine, Roslovic, and Bjorkstrand or Voracek at even strength. So some good offensive options there. He might just be a streaming option, and he might just, or like a late round flyer, a last round flyer kind of thing, but something to keep an eye on. Anyway, we wanted to mention him here. The over-under is 6 goals and 40 points. What do you guys think?
I don't think he'll get to 40 points. I'll take the under.
Yeah, I'll take the under as well.
I am definitely taking the under on this one. Especially with all that power play time we got last season. I like that Chicago power play more than I like this one, so.
Yeah, I picked him up a couple times last season when he was in Chicago because he was getting first unit power play time there, right? But they had some injuries and stuff, and their power play wasn't clicking as much as maybe it should have been. So yeah, I think even strength production, there's something there. Maybe in deep leagues, if you're in like a 12 or 14 team league, definitely keep an eye on Boqvist, but not a whole lot to to love there. So, and last up here, we have Noah Dobson, undrafted last year in fantasy, 1.34 fantasy points per game over the past 3 years. He's got pedigrees, 12th overall pick in 2018, and he's got potential upside, but the production has been limited to date in Long Island. The results are starting to show incrementally, but are far from fantasy relevant at this point. He saw improvement in most statistical categories last year, and now with Nick Leddy gone, there's some opportunity there for him to pick up some more power play minutes. They've been waiting for Ryan Pulock to be the guy in the power play forever, and I don't know. This might be Pulock's last chance to show he can run the power play, and if it doesn't work out, they're going to be looking to Noah Dobson to make that work. So the over-under here is set at 5 goals and 25 points. What do you guys think?
I'm going over. I think he'll take that number one power play spot, and I think he's going to run with it.
I agree, Bruce. Yeah. This they drafted this guy thinking he's going to be their number one defenseman, future number one defenseman, yeah. And I think he's going to just have to prove that at some point here. So I'll take the over as well. John?
And broken record, I'm going to take the over too.
Perfect.
Like Bruce said, I think he's going to get to PP1, and he's going to take it on, and it'll be his.
Okay. Well, that was the last defenseman here we had to highlight. Obviously, there's so many more options, guys. Check out the spreadsheet. We've included a link at the bottom of the show notes. So once this goes out, whatever podcast directory you're using, check the show notes. Check our website, fantasyhockeyhacks.com, and the link will be there. Also in the show notes that we're going to include is our top 30 goal scorers for defensemen, top 30 playmakers, so assists, and top 30 power play specialists. And then let's just go through some bounce back candidates and breakout candidates here, guys, before we sign off. So bounce back candidates first. Bruce, this is your guy. You had him last year. I'm sure you want to talk about him. Rasmus Dahlin.
Yes. Yeah. It's had a rough go of it there last year. I kind of look at it this way. It can't be much worse, right? So
I was going to ask you, is that why he's a bounce back?
It can't get much worse yet. Granted, again, once they got past the trade deadline, everything seemed to take a step forward. So, but yeah, there's nowhere to go but up for him. We've seen it before. He's got the talent. It's just a matter of them Buffalo getting their stuff together, and I think he'll have a much better season this year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it'd be much worse than it was last year, unless of course Jack Eichel leaves. But they're going to get some good pieces back if that happens. So
they didn't have Eichel for all last season either. So
and that is true. So yeah, I think I would agree. I'm still going to take Rasmus Dahlin, but I'm not reaching for him.
No, I'm not either. But I'd still take him.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Still a draftable player, no question. John, is there somebody in that list you wanna touch on?
Out of that list, I'm looking at Tony DeAngelo. Can't get any worse for him. He's got a chip on his shoulder. I think he's got a point to prove, and I think he's gonna do that in Carolina.
I
think he's going to do solid. He's going to put up good numbers and for sure bounce back candidate.
Okay.
They give him the opportunity, like off ice issues aside, if he can put it together, you look what he did for the Rangers, not last year, but the year before, right? He put up some great numbers. So if he gets the opportunity, yeah, he can do some great things in Carolina.
Yeah. If he can just stay on the straight and narrow, don't piss anybody off too bad. And yeah. Just play hockey. I think for sure he's a bounce back candidate. He'll do well there. He's going to take over the power play role that Hamilton had there, right? So
yeah, the door could be open to him for sure.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys I like. The first one I'll touch on, just because I know you guys love him so much, is Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Okay.
So again, it can't be much worse than it was in Arizona, but I think he's still he's got a shot to do something, right? And he's now going to play with some real offensive talent in Vancouver. You know, he's going to play with Besser or Pettersson or Horvat. Like, he's going to play with some good players 5-on-5. I didn't actually check to see who they've got listed as his partner right now. Take a quick look.
I'm just going there right now.
So they've got Tyler Myers set up is his partner 5-on-5. So I mean, like, just now, if he's going with Tyler Myers and let's say Nils Höglander or Tanner Pearson on the left side, and then Horvat and Connor Garland. And I really like Connor Garland for next year too. So if that's your option at 5-on-5, yeah, I think Ekman Larson is going to put up some numbers next year, and then he's still going to get power play 2 time. Where again, you've got JT Miller, Vasily Podkolzin, Tanner Pearson, Nils Höglander. Like, you've got all these guys on the second power play unit too. So I really think he's going to have a bounce back. Sometimes a change of scenery is just good for a player. And that's kind of the way I'm looking at it with Ekman Larson here.
Well, he definitely got a talent upgrade around him. So yeah, I see him bouncing back as well.
The other one, you guys tell me if I'm full of it or not, but I think Nate Schmidt could be a sneaky bounce back candidate. I just thought of him today. He's put up some power play numbers in his career, right? When he was with Vegas, I think he handled some power play one duties there, but he didn't get a lick of power play time in Vancouver, right?
No, he did not.
I'm just looking here. So in 2018, 2019, he had 41% power play share, and then it went down in 2019 because of Shea Theodore, but then they shipped him off to Vancouver and he got 21% power play share. So, you know, just over a minute of power play time, not much there to work with. His shot rate went down again last year. Shooting percentage has gone down. So I think he's due for a bounce back. And Bruce, like we were talking about, it's not really set in Winnipeg. There's not, you know, like Morrissey or Pionk, they've had their time, their shares on power play one. And so if Schmidt can come in there in training camp and really show some, you know, some skill and some grit, he might get a chance to play on the power play. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's been, last season it was kind of a revolving door, right? So the power play basically wasn't so much about the defensemen, it was all the forwards, right? So they got Wheeler, Scheifele, Ehlers, Connor are all there, right? So yeah. Defenseman's kind of like all the, he's kind of the token defenseman on the power play, right? So,
yep.
Because Pionk was really good 5-on-5, which he was in New York before he got traded. Morrissey's been, he's been okay on the power play, but yeah, Schmidt could easily sneak in there and steal some time away, especially from Morrissey.
Yeah. Yeah, it might end up being Pionk and Schmidt, right? Like Morrissey, they've given him time, but it doesn't seem to do much with it. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm looking here at Schmidt's numbers from 2017 to 2020, like those 3 seasons, he was on an 82 game pace of right around 40 points in all 3 seasons.
That's decent. So,
right? That's like decent. That's pretty solid production, and he wasn't getting a lot of power play time in 2 of those years. So, and actually in all 3 years, he was less than 50%, like well below 50%. So,
and the one season for Vegas, he was out because of that suspension, right? And he still came back and put up close to 40 points in that season. So,
yeah. Yeah. So for me, bounce back guy for next year, I think.
He's someone to keep an eye on in the later rounds, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Anyone else there you guys want to talk about?
I didn't have anybody else on my list.
Okay. I guess Krug, like he's a guy that we could see bounce back after kind of a meh season in St. Louis.
Yeah, could just have been, again, getting acclimated with the new team and stuff like that. And St. Louis didn't really do as well as was expected of them. So
what I would say here, his shooting percentage was 1.8% last year. His 3-year average is 4.2 and his career average is 4.8. So most players, I think the number is 95% of the time, they're going to be plus or minus 4% of their career average. So yes, 1.8 still falls in that range, but I think you're going to see a number closer to his career average next year. And if that's the case, you're going to expect some more production out of this guy. So
definitely.
He was still in a 51-point pace over 82 games, right? Like, I mean, it wasn't like he was terrible, but he just wasn't his typical self. So
yeah.
So, and again, depressed ADP, right? His value's down. that's a guy you could snag and get some good value on later in your draft.
Definitely.
So, and the last one, I guess, too, is Keith Yandel, just as a power play specialist in Philly. And what I'll mention here, too, is in our list, from 2018 to 2021, he was the number one defenseman for power play points. He had 78 power play points. Second was John Carlson at 74. Third was Hedman at 71. Krug had 71 power play points as well. So those are two guys kind of in our bounce back categories, Yandel and Krug, that you might want to give some serious consideration for, even if it's just for their power play production. And then last up here, let's just go through breakout candidates quickly. Who do you guys want to talk about from that list?
Jamie Drysdale? Oh, whoops, he's not on the list. Oh,
he's not on the list. Okay, well, let's put him on there then, Bruce. I'm going to just, Jamie Drysdale. Okay, well, yeah, I mean, we just talked about him, right? So you think, obviously, breakout candidate, you like him for next year.
They've got a lot of young, talented players on the team. At some point, they've got to take a step, right? And Drysdale's sample size was pretty small, but the projections on him are huge, right? So
yep.
I'm not going to say he's going to blow the doors off everybody and come in and do that, but from what everyone is saying is like 25 points, I'm expecting, I don't know if he'll hit 50 points, but I think he'll come close.
Okay, what's Bruce's hot take? So, yeah, 50 points is Bruce's hot take?
I think he'll come close to 50 points.
Okay. And how many goals?
15.
15 goals. Okay, you heard it here first. Bruce Gunther's hot take on Jamie Drysdale. 15 goals, 50 points. You know what? You might not be wrong. We'll see.
He's the opportunity is there, right? There.
Yeah.
He's got draft pedigree, and it's the opportunity is there for him. And Anaheim could be one of those teams this year. The Pacific Division sucks, basically, right? When you look at it on paper, it's not a good division. So they've got a chance to do some real damage this year. So he's going to play a lot with Zegras. So
that's where I would agree, Bruce, is that he has the opportunity, right? He is going to be relied upon quite heavily as a power play specialist.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. John, anyone on that list you really like, or you want to?
On that list, I'm actually most interested in Alexander Romanov, especially with the whole Shea Weber situation going on there in Montreal. I think Romanov's going to get the chance to play, and I think he's going to take that opportunity and go with it. I'm excited to see what he comes up with this year, and you definitely heard his name a lot there in the playoffs and everything else. So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens there.
Okay. Yeah. It could be a sneaky good pick, late, like actually probably someone you could pluck off the waiver wire early in the season, right?
Yep.
I mean, on this list, obviously we all like Vince Dunn. I think there's potential there. Bouchard, I think there's potential. Heiskanen and I really like. He's a guy, and that's obvious, that goes without saying, but I think he's and I think he's going into his fourth year, which is typically when guys kind of see their breakout. So keep an eye on him. But the other one I'm really excited about is Charlie McAvoy. I think he's finally going to do it next year. He's going to put it all together. There's no more Chara there. I think he showed in the playoffs he can take the power play duties over from Matt Grzelcyk. I'm expecting a big year, so that's one guy I'd look at for sure. And with that, guys, we're done for the week. So unless there's anything else you want to talk about. Nope. Okay.
I'm good.
Alrighty. Well, like I said earlier, guys, stay tuned. Definitely check back in next week when we cover goalies to finish off our how to win your fantasy hockey league series. We're really excited to have Nate from Apples and Genos come on and talk about the zero G draft strategy. So that's gonna be great. And then I think the week following that, we're going to get back into the full fantasy hockey guide for next season. We'll get into some predictions and things like that. So, Bruce, John, thanks a lot. It was fun as always. Looking forward to next week too. And, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Take care.